Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Tom Meredith.
Thanks for being with us here this morning on Galesburg Live, our guest in the second hour. We've had him on numerous times before. He's a former judge, a local historian, and we've talked everything from the Underground Railroad and the history of Knox College to his trips to all the Major League Baseball parks. As we welcome in Harry Buckley, good morning, Harry. How are you today?
Fine, Tom. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming in this morning. All right. So Ulysses S. Grant, a president, obviously a general from the Civil War, among other things, and a reputation gone bad, I guess, unfounded. And we're going to get into all that. You, as a local historian, and not just local, but Ulysses S. Grant is somebody that you've studied extensively. And actually, you have portrayed him numerous times, including on a PBS special. Kind of talk about how that came about, and maybe your interest in Grant in the first place.
Okay, yeah. I've always been interested in the Civil War. I think since the centennial back in the 60s, I started being fascinated by the Civil War. And I eventually ended up going to some Civil War battlefields. And one day I went to a reenactment at a Civil War battlefield. And the reenactment was really neat. And I mean, probably 10,000 reenactors. And you get at least a little idea of what it must have been like back then. So after that, I said, I want to do that one time. So I bought a Confederate uniform, just a real simple Confederate uniform, and went out to Gettysburg and reenacted out there for an anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. Well, in addition to that, my wife and kids had never let me grow a beard before. Every time I'd let it go 3 or 4 days on vacation, they would say, Dad, it's time to shave. So I was going to be gone for 2 weeks. I was going to be in Chicago and then out there. And so I asked my wife, said, what do you think if I grow a beard? She said, if I don't have to see it, I don't care. Go ahead. So I grew a beard and I went out to Gettysburg. By the time I got back, it had filled in enough that she said, oh, that's not so bad. Maybe you can keep it for a while. So I kept it. And so I had the beard, and I happened to be reading a book about Ulysses Grant because I really didn't know much about him. And turns out that this book was very critical of Grant, but the cover of it had a full-faced picture of him. And I remember sitting it down one day and saying, boy, I really look like that guy.
So it was an actual photograph of him.
Yeah, it was a photograph of Grant.
Okay.
And I said, I really look like him. I'm about the same size he was. And one of my pet peeves in reenacting is old, fat reenactors, because the Civil War soldiers were 20 years old and weighed 130 pounds.
Right. And were working hard on a farm or whatever in really great shape.
Yeah. And the reenactors, 20-year-olds can't afford all the gear for reenacting, so it falls to the old guys. So I said, rather than be an old, fat reenactor, I could be Grant. And so all you had to do is order the uniform. And there's a guy in Rockford that made up a uniform for me. I contacted a couple of reenactments out in the East Coast and said, do you need a Grant? And I got out there, and turned out one time we were walking back from one of the things that happened, and I was just talking to a guy, and he turned out to be a reporter for USA Today. And he said, hey, I'm taking General Lee's picture this afternoon. Why don't you come over? And so I went over and he took my picture and ended up on the front page of USA Today. And the guy called me a dead ringer for Grant. And so from that, PBS called me for a show they were doing, and I got to do that. And so that was, it was a love of the Civil War and a growing interest in Grant, plus a growing beard. So that was how it worked.
That's a really cool story. So had you had any other acting experience?
No. Well, I mean, I've done some Prairie Player stuff, and unfortunately, right, I'm not a very good actor. So they have to, the directors always have to work around that. So,
well, I mean, Grant probably wasn't a good actor either.
Yeah.
So there you go. Harry Buckley, our guest this morning. We're talking this morning about Ulysses S. Grant, former president of the United States, with a reputation that it's really strange how this came about. And before we get into that, I want to talk more about the history, but the reputation that people think about was not him, and it came about much later after he passed away and more in more recent history. Talk a little bit, let's talk some history, because obviously one of those we claim as an Illinois president, but he was not a native of Illinois.
Oh, in fact, he was barely here. They'd only lived here in Galena a few months, and it was only as a result of his having failed in farming and everything else down in St. Louis after he resigned his commission from the Army. He'd been in the old Army, gone to West Point and stuff. he'd vowed he'd never work for his dad again, but his dad owned a store in Galena.
Was he worked with leather, right?
Or yeah, his dad was had a leather, big, fairly successful leather business, and his Ulysses' two brothers ran the store in Galena. They both got sick, and they needed somebody to go up to the store, so he went up, but they went up in about May of 1860. Had four kids. They rented a little house on the side of the hill. You read Mrs. Grant's memoirs, and you get the distinct impression that she was she didn't particularly like being a shopkeeper's wife in Galena with four kids. But when the war broke out, every town would raise a company of men, try to get 100 men, and they had a meeting, and there was a guy there named John Rollins who ended up being on Grant's staff, but he was a lawyer in town, and he was the firebrand at the meeting. Grant said after Rollins got up and talked, Grant said he would even talk me into enlisting. And so Grant had real war experience. He was about the only officer who fought in every battle in the Mexican War.
Oh, wow.
So his experience was real. Yeah, and they said, well, you know what to do. You know the paperwork and stuff. Take him to Springfield and see what happens. So he went to Springfield. He did their paperwork. He wanted to get a commission for himself. He said he owed it to the country. They educated him, and he knew about being an officer. Well, it took a long time because Grant had a reputation in the old army of being a drunk. It was an unfair reputation, but nonetheless, it followed him around, and the old army had been so small that everybody knew it. For instance, he went out to Ohio to see about, since that's where he was really from, to see if he could get a commission out there. Well, the commander out there was General McClellan, who ended up at one time being ahead of the U.S. Army. But McClellan was a pretty big jerk. And he left Grant sitting in his waiting room for 2 days.
Oh, geez.
And wouldn't even see him. So Grant came back home, eventually got a commission, and through the sponsorship of a congressman from Galena. So
where did that reputation come from at that point of him being a drunk?
Well, Grant couldn't hold his liquor.
Okay.
He was 5'8 or 5'9. He weighed about 140 pounds. His friends said one sip of bourbon and he'd start to slur his words, and three fingers of bourbon and he was gone. He was passed out.
Okay.
He just couldn't hold his liquor. So in the old army, he was out on the West Coast. His wife and their kids were living on the East Coast. He hadn't seen his wife for a couple of years. He loved his wife dearly, and letters weren't getting out. It was a rough time. Well, everybody drank in the old army because there wasn't anything to do. It was peaceful where they were out in Vancouver, Washington. So there's one day reportedly that he was drunk or smelled of alcohol when he was charged with handing money out to the men for their pay period. And his commander said, you either resign or I'm going to court-martial you. Well, several of his friends said, you weren't drunk. You should do the court-martial and fight this thing because it's not fair. Mm-hmm. He said, I just want to get out. I'm tired. I want to go home. I want to see my wife. And so he was the third man in his class at West Point to make captain. So it was the day he made captain is the day he resigned.
Oh, wow.
So he had that incident, and his friends knew he really couldn't drink very much. He wasn't a very good drinker. But the foremost Grant scholar in the country was John Y. Simon, who was a professor at Southern Illinois University. And he said, without question, Grant was not an alcoholic, that he exhibited none of the classic signs of an alcoholic, went for years without drinking at all. But there were a couple of times in the war when it was questioned as to whether he was drinking. And as we all know, if you get a reputation like
right.
that, and especially in something as political as the army, they're going to always use that against you. So even the incidents where they describe it, the scholars will say there's not a lot of background for this, not a lot of support for
it. And like you say, that story, the way it travels, very slowly at that time, by the time it gets back to the East Coast, this guy's a drunk.
Raging drunk all the time, So that was kind of how the story started and the reputation started. But when Ken Burns did his Civil War series, they had Shelby Foote, who was a historian and novelist. And he said, Grant never drank when there was anything going on. And the only time he drank was if his wife wasn't around. And when he was bored and his wife wasn't there, that's when the incidents were reported. But he and his wife had a really wonderful relationship. You read about 19th century marriages and like Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln, and you don't always wonder about those things. But Grant and his wife truly loved each other.
Well, and how hard that must have been at that, because it's not like you jump on a plane and fly back in a few hours. You know, he's on the West Coast for years, and like you said, even his letters that weren't getting out to her for whatever, months at a time or whatever.
Yeah, you read the letters that he wrote back to her, and he said, it's been 6 months since I got a letter from you. And their second child was born after he left and for the West Coast. He didn't even know about the child for a while. So it was tough, and he didn't want to do it anymore. Now, by the time he was in the Civil War and was one of the top commanders, his wife could come visit him. One of his sons would come down and stay in camp sometimes. In fact, something got hit, a saddle or something, got hit by a stray bullet. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I'm thinking about that. It's like, that wouldn't happen in this day and age. You're not inviting your family. You don't want to invite your family.
Yeah. Although during the Civil War, it's interesting that families sometimes did travel, even with the enlisted men. Yeah. And there was a group of people, they called them sutlers, that they would go around and they would sell food and they'd sell extra equipment to the guys. And they would just follow them along wherever they went. And you also have to remember that they would sit in camp for months at a time with nothing to do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and didn't some of the battles, like Gettysburg, for instance, weren't there spectators? I mean, people would take a picnic. Did that happen or not?
That happened at the original Battle of Bull Run, Bull Run.
Okay.
That was before people knew what the war was going to be. That was in the summer of 61. And, yeah, people from Washington came out with, they expected to see the war played out and done, and they ended up in mass confusion, running back to Washington with the retreating Union soldiers. It was a mess. That people didn't do that after then. They learned.
Yeah, which is a good thing, obviously. Yeah. Harry Buckley, our guest this morning, we're talking about Ulysses S. Grant. As Harry has studied him, he's portrayed him as well. We'll talk more about it coming up. We'll take a break for news and be back. This is Galesburg Live.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Tom Meredith.
Good morning. This is Galesburg Live. Our guest this morning is Harry Buckley. We're talking Civil War, not totally Civil War times, but for the most part, because we're talking about Ulysses S. Grant here this morning. Harry has portrayed him before. He's studying him. And we're kind of talking a little bit about the history. He's an Ohio native. His father worked with leather, making leather, I guess, and leather products. Is that kind of...
Yeah, tanning leather.
Tanning, okay.
Tanning leather was apparently a really bad job, a really nasty job. And Grant always vowed that he would never do it. He had to work in his dad's tannery while he was growing up, and he vowed he'd never do it again. There was a story that if you met a man on the street, met a tanner on the street, no matter how many times he had bathed, you could tell he was a tanner. Yeah. It was apparently a real bloody and nasty job, which is one of the reasons that Grant had a lifetime aversion to blood. He couldn't stand the sight of blood.
Really?
Yeah, which is very strange.
But yeah, absolutely, being involved in the a couple of wars.
He demanded his meat be cooked completely dry. He didn't eat a lot of meat, but when he didn't want any blood on the plate. He couldn't stand the sight of it.
So he grew up in Ohio, and his father, and I'd ask you off the air if his father had moved from Ohio to Galena. That's not what happened. He opened another, basically a second location of what he did, but had his other sons running that in Galena. How did that come about that they ended up in Galena, of all places?
Well, Galena was a very important city, of course, before the Civil War.
Yeah.
And it had a large population. The river was navigable then, and they bought pelts, animal skins, to make leather out of from the traders and mountain men out in the West. And that was, Galena was the place they would come and sell their wares.
Okay.
And so that was why they had the outpost there, or had the store. And it eventually just became a leather store. But
so with going back a little bit, again, growing up in Ohio, his father was a tanner. How does he end up going, and where is the education that he ended up going to West Point?
Yeah, it's interesting because Grant, in his memoir, said he had no intention of going to West Point, but he and his dad had kind of a love-hate relationship for his whole life. His dad was apparently pretty domineering. So Grant says that his dad came home one day and said, well, you're going to West Point. And Ulysses said, no, I'm not. And his dad said, I think you are. And in his memoirs, Grant said, when my dad said, I think you are, that meant you are. But Grant's father had a friend who was a congressman, and he contacted the congressman, and Grant said it was really hard because he and the congressman had been really close friends and then had a bitter falling out about 10 years before and weren't speaking to each other. But Grant's father took his hat in his hand and went to contact the congressman. They found out that the guy who was currently going to West Point, who lived just up the hill from them, was not going back. So there was going to be a vacancy that nobody knew about. His dad contacted the congressman. The congressman appointed him. Now, the other interesting thing is that the congressman, you know, you're going to find this hard to believe, but he waited till the last day to fill out the paperwork.
Oh, wow.
And so when he was filling it out, he didn't know for sure what he knew. His name was Ulysses Grant, but his mother's maiden name was Simpson. So the guy guessed that his name was Ulysses Simpson Grant. It wasn't. It was actually Hiram Ulysses Grant.
Oh, okay.
But he filled in the papers as Ulysses Simpson Grant. Grant then went to West Point. He describes going on a train and traveled at 18 miles an hour, which was faster than he'd ever traveled before. Walked up to the registrar at West Point, and he said, my name's Grant. I'm from Ohio. And the guy said, Ulysses Simpson Grant? And he said, well, no, my name's Hiram Ulysses Grant.
Not anymore.
If you know the military, yeah, you know what happened.
Right.
And so Grant, for years, wouldn't use the Simpson because that wasn't really his name. But he eventually began signing it as Ulysses S. Grant. And so at West Point, everybody has a nickname. And because his initials were U.S., they called him Uncle Sam. So everybody who knew him called him Sam. All of the generals, both that fought with him and the Confederates that fought against him, who he knew or were he's related to some of them, mm-hmm. called him Sam. That was his nickname because of that.
Which worked out better as U.S. or Uncle Sam than it would have been as Hug.
Yeah.
Well, with his real name.
And actually, he points that out. He said, I had a little suitcase, and it had my initials, H-U-G, on it. He said, I was always embarrassed because it said Hug on it. So, yeah, he didn't like that.
Kerry Buckley joining us this morning. We're talking about Ulysses S. Grant. So we got went to West Point. So it was the same process. Then you had to actually have a recommendation from a congressman, the same as from somebody in Congress. The same as today. I didn't realize that the process had always been the same with West Point.
Yep. And he says he had no intention of making military a career. He said if he could have been a mathematics instructor at West Point, he would have done that. He often suggested that he didn't like his time at West Point, but everything later in his life indicates that he really liked his time there, that it had a special place in his heart. And so when he graduated, he went in the Army, and he was middle of his class. There were about 40 people in his class, and he was about 20th, class of 1843. Almost immediately, the Mexican War started, and they went to Mexico, and he fought as a second lieutenant in the Army. He was actually a quartermaster. He was usually assigned to be back behind the lines by about a half a mile with supplies, but said that he ended up fighting in every battle and in the only officer to fight in every battle of the Mexican War. He loved Mexico, too.
Well, he was obviously very intelligent because, one, you don't get to where you are in the military without that, and plus becoming president eventually as well, and you know, being interested in mathematics the way he was as well.
Yeah, he was a very intelligent guy, but he was also very quiet.
Really?
And
okay. Someone like introverted or just...
Introverted. His friends, now his friends say, if you were just sitting around with him talking in a small group, he was lots of fun and told jokes and had a good time. But if you were in a larger group, there's a story when he received, well, he was the Congress created the position of lieutenant general. They reactivated it. There had not been anyone holding that position officially since George Washington. So, and in 1864, as the war was going on, they finally wanted somebody in charge. They gave a third star, and they knew they were going to give it to Grant. So Grant goes to Washington to receive it, to meet President Lincoln. He's never met him before. He checks in at his hotel. It's kind of funny, the story. He was brought his son with him, and he goes to the Willard Hotel, and he said, I need a room. And the clerk isn't very interested. He said, generals were a dime a dozen. And he said, I may have something for you up on the fifth floor. that I'll have to look and see. And so he signs the registry, Ulysses S. Grant and Son, mm-hmm. Galena, Illinois. The clerk looks, and everybody knows who he is. And the clerk says, I think we've got a better room than that. So he checks in, and then he just walks down to the White House by himself, knocks on the front door of the White House. The Lincolns are given a reception. So they show him in, and there's all these people there, and Lincoln figures out who he is. He has him come over, and to Grant's chagrin, because Lincoln was 6'4", and Grant was about 5'8", or 5'9", mm-hmm. he had Grant stand on a couch.
Oh, gosh.
And people came walking by and shaking his hand. Well, Grant did not like crowds, and he didn't like to speak in public. And so that was pretty embarrassing for him. But
well, and that's interesting. Also ended up, you know, running for president with that kind of being his personality, not liking to speak in public and that type of thing. How did that, once we get past the war and everything, how did that come about that he ended up running for president?
By that time he got his third star, and especially by the time he beat Robert E. Lee, everybody knew he was going to be the next president of the United States.
So it's kind of like with Washington.
Yeah. And in fact, in 1864, when Lincoln ran for reelection, he was afraid that Grant was going to run against him. He sent one of his guys out to Virginia to talk to Grant. Grant said, "I have no interest at all in doing that." But Lincoln knew that if Grant ran against him, Grant would beat him. But Lincoln was his boss. He didn't have any interest in that.
Yeah.
But everybody knew.
But he's a war hero.
And that was enough. And plus Andrew Johnson, who succeeded Lincoln, had made a big mess of stuff in Reconstruction. And Grant didn't like Johnson. Johnson didn't like Grant. But everybody knew Grant was going to get the nomination in 68. And when he got it, everybody knew he was going to win.
So what was the impetus? Was it that, okay, well, we did some things, we won the war, and now Johnson went in here and screwed some things up. I want to get in and fix it. Was that kind of the impetus behind it? Or was it just other people pushing him so much, you need to do this because you're going to be the president?
Presidential candidates did not campaign personally in those days. They didn't make speeches.
Right.
They stayed at home. And people went out and campaigned for him. But you can imagine, man, a radio station would have would have lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
But they didn't run.
No ads.
They didn't do ads and stuff like that. So it was really, this was really a campaign of personality. Grant saved the Union, and everybody knew he did. All the soldiers knew he did, and the people all said Grant won the war, and when nobody else had been able to, and he won it through determination and doggedness, and that was enough for the people to vote for him.
So he may have been elected whether he wanted to be or not.
Yeah, almost.
Sounds like.
Yeah.
We're talking about Ulysses S. Grant. Harry Buckley joining us here this morning. We're going to come back and talk about the reputation and kind of what happened, how his reputation got tarnished and why and when also, because it wasn't always that way. We'll talk more about that coming up next. This is Galesburg Live. Here in our final segment of Galesburg Live this morning, talking with Harry Buckley. He's a historian and has portrayed General and President Ulysses S. Grant, I guess, as General Grant. Did you actually portray him as president as well? Or
no, I do a little one-man show, and I do him in that. But when I did the PBS thing, it was called Ulysses Grant, Warrior President. But I played him as the general. There was another guy that played him as the president. You never saw our faces, so it didn't matter, but I wasn't. He did the presidency.
Okay. Well, Grant, and this is for you know, for a long time, and, you know, including for your age, my age, growing up, whatever, that there's this reputation that, he was a great general, and that's why he got elected president, but the guy was just a cigar-smoking drunk. And that was not always the case, or that the reputation was not always the case, and it wasn't true, and it's really strange that this happened much later after he was long gone, in the 30s that this came? Kind of talk about how that horrible reputation came about when it wasn't at all true.
Well, you got to start back with the fact that when Grant was alive, and especially after the war, he was the most respected living American. Lincoln, of course, was revered, but by then he was dead. Mm-hmm. And certainly during his life, if you've been to the Lincoln Museum, you've seen that he was not revered during his lifetime, vilified by lots of people. So Grant was well respected even by many in the South, that he was seen as being he gave honorable terms to Robert E. Lee and accepted the surrender and didn't do harsh things to the Confederacy. So he was regarded as he was so well regarded that in Carl Sandburg's autobiography, he describes the funeral parade they had for Grant in Galesburg. In many towns around the country, they had, and you see pictures of them, they had huge monument over, or a big arch over on Main Street. They had all sorts of men marching and bands and everything. Sandburg's dad took him down to see it, even though Grant wasn't there, but it was, that was the all over the country, they paid respects to him. Grant's tomb or mausoleum is the largest private mausoleum in the country.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And it's built on Riverside Drive up on the upper west side of New York City, right near Harlem. And the reason it was built there is because the primary fundraisers were the black troops.
Okay.
They wanted to pay their respects to Grant. And so there was money raised from all over, but a significant portion, and one of the main fundraisers, was a member of what they then called the U.S. Colored Troops. But they raised money to honor their fallen leader and to build that museum. And that's why they built it up so close to Harlem.
Okay.
So, and when it was built, when he died in 1886 and was until the First World War, his tomb was the most visited site in the United States.
Wow.
Veterans from all over would come to see it. Families, people would come to see it. Just so you know.
So, yeah, and at that point, you still had some Civil War veterans. And, yeah, so that's, yeah,
which makes sense. Yeah. They were still alive in the First World War.
Yeah.
But just so you know, no one is buried in Grant's tomb. And to the old joke about who's buried in Grant's tomb.
Right.
Because both he and his wife are up on catafalques. So,
oh, okay.
So they're not in the ground.
Okay.
So that's just a little Grant. Yeah. Very little Grant.
Well, that's because I kind of wondered that as well, why it was there. So where did he, after presidency, where did he make his residence?
He lived in New York City.
He did live in New York City, though. Okay.
Yeah. He, kind of interesting, right after he finished the presidency in 1877, he and Julia, his wife, went on an around-the-world tour. He loved to travel, and they went to England and met Queen Victoria. They went to France. They went all over Europe. They went to Egypt and saw the pyramids. They went to India. They went to China, Japan, every place. Everybody all over the country, all over the world knew him, said he wanted to go from Japan to Australia, but he couldn't find a boat that would take him, so they didn't go there. They came back to America. It took over 2 years to do this tour. And they got on a train in San Francisco, and the papers all over the country were tracking his progress back to the East Coast.
Yeah.
This is 1879, and he was there were talk that he might run for president again in 1880. But he had that was when he came through Galesburg, and the train stopped at the CB&Q station, and he got out on the back platform and made a little, very reluctant talk. There were reporters all around. The reporters on the left side of the car said, "We couldn't hear what you said." Because you talked to those other guys, and Grant looked down and he said, "Well, ask them what I said."
Okay.
And just about that time, somebody threw an egg and hit General Grant, President Grant, behind the ear with an egg.
Ooh.
Grant, who was not given to shows of anger, jumped off the train and was going to chase whoever it was that threw the eggs at him. He was restrained, and he said, "But I'll give $100 to whoever finds out who threw that egg at me." Got back on the train. I went over to the courthouse once to look it up, and there's three kids that had just gotten out of reform school.
Okay.
And, so they didn't, eventually they let it die down.
Yeah.
But Grant's last few years are very interesting. And the last year that he was alive, his son had been in an investment firm in New York City with the foremost investor in the country, and they ended up, it was a fraud, and the guy took off with all the money, and Grant was left broke, absolutely destitute. He was friends with Mark Twain, who convinced him to write his autobiography, which he didn't want to do up until that time, but he had to for the money. He wrote it and found out that he was dying of throat cancer from all those cigars he smoked. And he battled through pain and finished his memoirs about 4 days before he died.
Wow.
And it was the best-selling book other than the Bible in the 19th century. It's the only presidential memoirs that have remained in print since they were originally printed. It's quite a story.
Well, so he was revered, we're talking, for a good, 40 years. I mean, while he was still living, but for another at least 40 years after his death. What happened? What changed when we got to,
1930s.
World War II time, Depression.
The 1930s, there was the American Historical Society, which is the professional organization for academics that write history. The president of that organization was a unreconstructed Confederate and virulent racist, and he hated Ulysses Grant. And they had control over what kind of papers were getting published. And they simply wanted people to write papers that were critical of Grant. And so those are the ones that got published. That became, again, the reputation, unearned, but it was a reputation that followed him until by the 1970s, he was a cartoon character. And, they did, I remember it was Bob Newhart, somebody did a comedy routine about the Lee's surrender to Grant and how Grant was drunk and didn't know what was going on. Then, in the last 20 years, there's been a big resurgence in Grant's reputation. A book just out this last year by Ron Chernow, who wrote Hamilton, the book that on which the musical was based. I don't think Chernow's book is way too long, but there are several good books out on Grant, and they do a much fairer job of discussing him.
So kind of, it was one person that really... That's amazing. That's sad.
Yeah. What he did was steer the historical community to the negative side of Grant, and those became the papers that were published and the stories that people started hearing. And by that time, there weren't any veterans
around. Yeah, all the Civil War veterans were gone, and so all you're just seeing what they're producing and the stories. I'm sure there were some stories still, people that had known him and to their kids and grandkids, but what was being published... Was not favorable at all. Harry, thanks so much for being our guest here this morning. Very, very interesting stuff. Everything you probably didn't know about General Ulysses S. Grant. It is 9 o'clock. News comes your way next.